Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Ohio's legislative and congressional races are not competitive. That is, if you're a Republican in a Democratic district, most likely you'll never see a Republican elected to represent you, and vice versa. The problem is gerrymandering. And that is, district lines are drawn to favor one party over another. And Republicans have controlled that process for so many years through so many redistricting processes, they have an ironclad hold on both the Ohio General Assembly and Ohio's congressional delegation. Ohio tends to go 50-50 Republican and Democrat across the board, but that is not reflected in the Ohio State House or in Congress. This hour, we're talking about the issue and possible responses. Joining us now is Columbus Dispatch State House reporter Jim Siegel. Welcome back, Jim.
Good morning.
You've been covering this story for a long, long time.
It's been a few years now, yes.
Has it always been this way?
You mean the gerrymandering?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, as far back as basically one man, one vote in this state. That's back to the early 60s. Yeah, it's always about whoever controls the power when the new census is taken every 10 years. That's who gets to draw the maps. And, back in like the 80s, I think 1980 was maybe the last time the Democrats had it. And the Republicans have had it ever since. And, this is not a specific problem with either particular party. Whoever has the power uses that power to draw districts to their benefit. The thing that has changed over the years is that they've gotten a lot better at it. The software is, 100 times more powerful than it used to be. They've got algorithms. They've got very, very detailed information on voters. So they know exactly where to put those lines to maximize benefit for them and in turn ensure that the minority party remains the minority.
Coming up, we're going to hear from a computer scientist who has developed another algorithm to work in the opposite direction, to create that balance that most people think they have when they go to the voting booth on election day. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So voters approved a measure in 2015 that changes legislative redistricting with new rules and requirements for bipartisanship. When does that go into effect, Jim Siegel?
That'll start when the next maps are drawn, and that will be after the 2020 census. Basically, these maps will be drawn in 2021. For the House and the Senate here in the legislature, it's a bipartisan commission similar to the one that's been used in the past. But there's a couple new lawmakers added to it. And the key is that in order to pass a map that lasts 10 years, they need to get a bipartisan vote from that commission, that panel. And that's very different than the past, where basically there was a 5-member panel, and quite often whoever was in charge had 3 or 4 members on it, whichever party controlled it, and they just went and did whatever they wanted, didn't even really fill in the other side on what was happening until the very end. And so this is supposed to allow for some more bipartisanship and cooperation. If they don't get that bipartisanship, then the map only lasts 4 years, and then they'll have to go back and draw it again. There are some who argue that actually may benefit folks, because then they can redraw them to the even more updated census numbers. But I believe most folks in the legislature, they like stability, they like predictability, and they don't like the fact that if they're the thought of having their lines change every 4 years probably would be a little unsettling for most members of the General Assembly. So there's a lot of new rules in place. I believe the gentleman you were talking about who's coming up later can talk a lot about those. So can Catherine later too. But there's a lot of new rules in place as to how they can draw those lines, and it should make for an interesting process as to exactly what kind of maps they are able to come up with and if we start to see a little more. A little more balance, a little more fairness in some of these districts.
Even if we do in the next redrawing, does that mean that the Ohio General Assembly will change in kind or not? Is this more of a gradual process when it comes to what we actually see representing us in the Ohio General Assembly?
Well, I think it, It depends. I don't think it'll be a stark change by any stretch. Right now, the Republicans have a massive advantage in the House and the Senate, and even under a map that Democrats really like, I don't think they could win the either chamber back for a couple cycles. It would just take time. I mean, for one thing, the Republicans will maintain a tremendous money advantage, and so that will continue to play into it. And then it's just the shifting political winds, which often come out of Washington more than Ohio. You just don't know, who's going to, which way the electorate may be leaning in any particular year. You know, in 2 years from now, even, next 2018. I mean, how are folks feeling about the way Donald Trump is doing his job, and how is that going to affect legislative and congressional races? So it's hard. I wouldn't say there'll be any dramatic shifts. That would be surprising, but at least you should start to see some, at least some more races where you'd think things should be more competitive, and they should start to move in that direction at least, and start giving voters some real choices on the ballot.
Congressional districts or the congressional district drawing process was originally included in the measure that voters approved in 2015, or it was included before they approved it. It was taken out before it went to a vote.
Right.
That was at the behest of then Speaker of the House, John Boehner, in Congress. Why weren't the races included in the redistricting change, the congressional races included?
Well, a big reason is because of Speaker Boehner and other members of the congressional delegation in Ohio. They just did not want the process changed. And frankly, most of them still do not want it. Democrats and Republicans. And some people would say, well, geez, why wouldn't the Democrats want to change this process? They have the Republicans have a built-in 12-4 advantage.
And herein lies the rub, right?
Exactly. And because you'd be surprised how much self-preservation wins out over over whether or not something is good for the state or good for the party at times, because I've talked to Democratic legislators who have told me about conversations they've had with Democratic members of our delegation, and they are just kind of floored by the responses they get about congressional redistricting and how they just they're not really behind it, even though it would greatly benefit. It could potentially have a big benefit for the Democratic Party in the big picture. Many of them really enjoy not having to run tough races, and so they just they're not that excited about changing the process either. So this needs to come from internally from the legislature. It needs to come from the public. Groups like this Fair Districts group that is pushing potentially a ballot issue for this November, because I don't know that the congressional delegation is ever really going to get heavily on board with this. At some point, they may just concede that it's going to happen, and so they begrudgingly sign off on a plan that they can live with, which I think is kind of where the Speaker of the House right now is trying to move them, Speaker Cliff Rosenberger. But I don't know that there's ever going to be a time where you get them privately and they say, oh, yeah, we definitely want to change this process, so I have to start running a competitive race every 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Explain why the process of gerrymandering is behind the issue of polarization in both the Ohio General Assembly and in Congress.
Well, it comes down to, like a lot of things in life, it's about being held accountable for things, for what you do. If you are not being held accountable by your boss, then your job performance probably isn't going to be as good, or you're not going to worry so much about the decisions you make at the end of the day, and whether they're the best decisions for whatever it is that the company or whatever. And in this case, I mean, you basically have a number of congressmen and frankly legislators whose only concern is a primary. That their biggest concern is that someone is going to come into their primary and run at them from their flank, from either the right flank or the left flank, and basically argue they're not conservative or liberal enough. They're not worried about the general election because they know that they'll beat whoever the opposing party puts up
because
by 20
so many,
plus points.
Right.
So when you get to that, there's no incentive for you to to try to find compromises. There's not a big incentive for you to work with the other party and try to develop bipartisan relationships. And that doesn't mean that no one does. I mean, mm-hmm. there are some, especially at the State House. The State House can be a much more bipartisan place than Congress is. Congress is terrible. But the State House at least will show some, there'll be some flickering lights of bipartisanship that come on every now and then. But there's just, at the end of the day, if you want to have these town hall meetings and you want to get your congressman in there and you want to hit them with hard questions about the Affordable Care Act replacement or Medicaid or what we're going to do with these Russian connections or whatever it is, or same with the way the Tea Party did back in the, before when Obama was in office and they wanted to hit Democrats with hard questions. I mean, there isn't as much incentive for these congressmen to get up in front of people and take that and try to seriously answer questions and seriously think
because
about what they're doing.
Because they aren't counting on their votes.
Right. They don't need to worry about it. If you don't have to worry about your general election, you approach your job much differently and it just pushes you to be a more partisan legislator.
Now, there have been efforts before to get this done, right? I mean, wasn't it included in the deal that Secretary of State John Husted, when he was Speaker of the House, put forth some years ago?
Yeah, there have been plans to do this. There have been a couple plans that hit the ballot over the last 10 or 20 years. They were defeated mainly because the Republicans did not have buy-in. And frankly, one of the biggest problems with some of these plans when they hit the ballot is they're overly complicated. And when that's the case, then the other side, fairly or unfairly, will pick them apart and take them and have been known to take them down. Now, the difference now from what some folks are telling me is that they just don't think as more and more people are becoming aware of this problem, there doesn't seem to be the same amount of enthusiasm to knock one down. If Fair Districts Ohio were to put a issue on the ballot that fairly resembled the issue that passed in 2015 that the legislature passed for legislative redistricting, if they were to do the same for congressional, I'm not sure you're going to see a whole lot of enthusiasm and fundraising to try to beat that down. And it's just – I don't think it's there anymore. And so I think that's where when Secretary of State Husted says that the congressional folks need to get behind a plan they can live with before someone gives them a plan they can't live with, I think that's the kind of thing he's talking about.
And speaking of complicated, you and I were talking before we got started about how people are becoming, just everyday people are becoming more aware. I mean, 30 years ago, editors told us, don't write about that. It's in the weeds. Nobody cares. 30 years later, people are starting to understand how important it is.
Well, I think the numbers the media has been reporting on it for quite a bit,
right?
But the numbers have just gotten so stark.
Ridiculous, yeah.
A quarter of legislative races were unopposed. But of the 87 races that were contested, only five were decided by less than 10 points. I mean,
those are called blowouts.
That's a ridiculous number. And the congressional races are even worse. I mean, the Republicans have had the same 12-4 advantage since the lines were drawn. And I remember writing about this back in when they drew this map in 2011. I remember writing, oh, the Republicans just drew themselves a 12-4 map. And I'd get some Republicans telling me, no, you can't say that. We don't know that that's the case. Well, yeah, it is. And it hasn't even been close. There hasn't been a competitive congressional race since 2012. And most of them now are the average margin of victory now is well over 30%.
And how many races are actually uncontested in November?
This last November? Or
yeah.
Like I said, about a quarter of legislative races were uncontested.
Where they had no one,
there was
no opposition on the ballot.
Yeah. Now, some of that is the gerrymandering. Some of that is just
Democrats.
Mostly Democrats just didn't get opponents for their, to run in these races. I think the congressional, I think there may have been one unopposed congressional race, but it didn't matter. I mean, those races, like I said, they were well over 30% average margin of victory. There's of the 16 congressional races or congressional districts in Ohio, 10 of them have never run a race that's been below 20-point margin of victory since the lines were drawn in 2011. That's through three cycles. It's never had a race less than 20%, and including all three in Franklin County. By the way, Franklin County, a solidly Democratic county now, is represented, of course, by two Republican congressional representatives and one Democrat. So if you want to know the impact of gerrymandering, you don't have to look very far outside your door in Franklin County, because there's the perfect example of how they're able to take a very blue county and turn most of it red just by the way they draw the lines.
We're talking about congressional redistricting proposals. There's two. One has been put forth by a state senator. We're going to talk to him later on in the program. Another is the one that will probably be on the ballot in November if they get the signatures they need. They need to do that by July 5th. Coming up, we're going to hear from a computer scientist who's written software, created an algorithm to do the job without any human interaction at all. So stay with us. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Ohio is considered a prime example of what's wrong with gerrymandering. That is the process by which legislative and congressional district lines are drawn to favor one party over another. Because Republicans have controlled the process for some three decades now in Ohio, they rule both the State House and Ohio's congressional delegation. Voters approved new rules for drawing State House district lines. Now some lawmakers and good government watchdogs are pushing for changes to how congressional lines are drawn. Still with us is Columbus Dispatch State House reporter Jim Siegel. And joining us by phone is Brian Olson. He's a software engineer from Massachusetts, where he has worked for more than a decade on software that can work on a home computer to create compact, impartial, non-gerrymandered districts. His work has been cited in The Washington Post and in scholarly journals. Welcome to the show, Brian Olson.
Good morning.
How does your software work?
Well, it starts by picking random places around a state and growing districts like soap bubbles until they all have the requirements of being contiguous districts and having equal population, and it keeps them compact the whole way. The physics really is like soap bubbles. They're just naturally tight. They keep a minimum shape.
What are the measures? What are the factors in district quality? How does that work?
The way I measure district compactness is I find the land area of a district, and then I measure the average distance per person to the center of that district. So that you might say, you know, on average, it's 20 miles from each person in this district to the center. So you can get a sense of how spread out people are. And I just make all of my maps to have that be as small as possible.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about how to draw lines that fairly represent the makeup of districts in Ohio, congressional districts. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. The Voting Rights Act requires that states draw majority-minority districts, but packing minority voters into groups large enough to control a district also diminishes their clout everywhere else. How does your algorithm account for that issue? Okay, it looks like we've lost Brian Olson for now. We're going to get him back. What about that, Jim Siegel? How much does the Voting Rights Act figure into this? It's not just it's not random issues that are raised.
Well, there's always been there was definitely the argument last time it was drawn that that legislators said that they needed to do everything they could to create or to keep the minority majority district, as you described it, in the Cleveland area. That we basically Ohio has had one minority majority district for many years. And there is a belief that had to be maintained, which is why you have I forget the number, where Congresswoman Marsha Fudge's district up there in Cleveland, it's it's one of the stranger looking districts that we have. It kind of snakes down from Cleveland down into Akron, and in order to create that dynamic. Now, there are some who will say that is not necessarily the case anymore. That maybe we can get away with not having a minority majority district anymore. Per se, I mean, I think most would say that they still want one or two districts in the state where you could have a minority population that's big enough where a minority, you know, congressman or congresswoman could you know certainly have a good chance of winning. However, like you said, the problem is that when you draw those kind of districts, and the same thing can be said for the district, the third district in Franklin County, represented by Joyce Beatty, although that's not minority majority, it certainly packs most of the black population in Franklin County is in that district. By doing that, it essentially packs Democratic voters all into the same district, which gives that district a very high Democratic index and essentially allows the Republicans to draw more favorable Republican districts all around it, which is why when I talked earlier about Franklin County having two Republican congressional districts and one Democrat, even though it's a solid blue county, that's how they do it. They pack all the Democrats into Joyce Beatty's district, which leaves plenty of Republicans for Pat Tiberi and Steve Stivers in order to absorb and as their districts spread out across especially Stivers. Stivers' district starts in Franklin County. It goes from like Upper Arlington down to Athens.
It's a snaking district.
Well, it's just a widespread district that has, you know, I don't think many people would think that Upper Arlington and Athens have a lot in common, and I think they'd be right. So that's the kind of district you end up with when you're doing that kind of thing. But now Tiberi and Stivers have not had a competitive race since these lines were drawn.
Brian Olson, obviously Republicans that control the process in Ohio now, Jim Siegel explained earlier that they have computer, you know, they have algorithms they use to create districts that benefit them. So they're not against using algorithms. How have people responded to your software?
A lot of people respond very favorably to it. You can look at the maps it produces and say, yeah, that kind of makes sense. And, they're certainly not perfect. They will miss some things that a good human districter can do, but they are obviously not biased in the way that the current maps are.
We were talking about the Voting Rights Act just a second ago. Does your algorithm account for that issue when it comes to drawing the majority-minority districts?
It does not currently. In Ohio, I see you have one majority black district.
Right.
And my map makes one district that has, you know, close but not quite a majority. In other states, I do make a couple majority-minority districts just because that's the lay of the land, and that happens naturally. But no, I'm not currently making sure that happens. But with the way recent Supreme Court decisions have gone, we're not sure, I think, if that's really going to be a requirement in the future. But it's still an interesting thing to look at.
What do you make of the Ohio Bipartisan Redistricting Commission amendment that passed in November 2015 and goes into effect in 2021?
I think it's really good. I think it's a really good bill. It has a lot of really strong rules about do this, then do this, then do this. And I think that locks down a solid procedure that will make impartial maps.
But you wrote that taking all the requirements of the commission together, there's no wiggle room for the commission to actually do anything.
And that's part of the good thing. I mean, the commission will have some choice about, you know, split this city instead of split this other city. But the rules say split as few cities as possible. And so that doesn't give them much room to do shenanigans.
Jim Siegel, why not just adapt the Ohio Bipartisan Redistricting Commission amendment to congressional redistricting? What have been the arguments against just doing that?
The biggest reason for legislative leaders is they do not want to give up control of drawing the maps for the congressional map. That is the number one thing. And there's a couple reasons for this. Some, you know, one is, I mean, the legislature is loath to give up any powers that it has, and this is one of their powers that has been designated to them historically, is to draw the congressional map. And the legislature, does not like to give up its powers, and that's, you know, it's understandable. The other thing, and this is one they'll talk, you know, that gets talked about a lot less, is it's big money for them, and people may not realize this, but especially during the years when these maps are being drawn, the congressional members of the Republican congressional members donate a lot of money to the legislative caucuses and the legislative members
at the state level.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars are suddenly collected from these folks during the years that these maps are being drawn. And that isn't, and if you want to try to tell me that's coincidence, I guess you could go ahead, but I'm going to tell you it's probably not. And so that is an unspoken reason, I believe, that they don't want to give up this control, is that it's simply a matter of being able to extract campaign donations out of congressional members who, you know, frankly, don't need the money themselves so much, since most of them are in safe districts anyway. But yeah, I mean, that's a big reason. And I mean, there's a couple other tweaks they'll need to make just to account for the fact that congressional district redistricting is different in that you have to have much closer, I believe, population size for these districts. Like right now, Ohio's congressional districts are almost dead even on population, whereas the legislative districts can have about, I think, a 5% variation one way or another, and still be under the state, at least still be okay. And so those kind of smaller tweaks need to be made. I know that there's some fighting over whether, you know, how do we decide whether to split counties or not. I know that groups, the Fair District groups, wants more language in there that keeps counties whole for the congressional, because there's just a lot fewer congressional districts, and they believe that if you let the commission split up counties, it'll still give them a lot of too much leeway to gerrymander.
I was looking, Brian Olson, at the comparisons between the way districts are drawn, say in states like Pennsylvania or North Carolina or wherever, and then once your algorithm is used to draw those lines, and it's sort of like the difference between, you know, a modern art splatter paint drawing and like a multicolored pinto pony. I mean, they very much get very compacted. How do you achieve? I mean, what's the main component of achieving that?
It's just looking at the census data of where people live. That's fundamentally the data that all of redistricting is done on. Mine just looks at that to keep people together. It's really trying to keep groups of people in a locality together as much as possible, and that's all.
Hey, Brian, I'm wondering, have you ever done an analysis of how the political indexes change on those districts once your software draws them versus the indexes that are in place under the current maps in those states?
It's definitely something to look into, but the data out there is fragmented. Every state publishes data in a different format, and sometimes different counties publish data in different formats. So it's on my to-do list, but no, I haven't yet.
What do you mean by that?
The analysis is usually done after a congressional or governor or presidential election.
Okay.
And you can get data precinct by precinct on how many people voted in this little area for one way or the other. And you use that for a proxy predicting what future elections might be.
Mm-hmm.
And the parties have access to this data very directly. They have, you know, decades of practice collecting that data. And so they use it to gerrymander. I have not used it to see what the partisan balance of my maps might come out to yet.
Email from Cynthia. What was the political landscape like before 2011? How many Democrats held statewide office? How has, if at all, gerrymandering affected statewide races? How does that work, Jim Siegel? Is it just a fundraising issue that you just start to accumulate?
I'm sorry. She asked, how did it affect statewide?
How many Democrats held statewide office before 2011, and how has gerrymandering affected statewide races?
Well, we lost two congressional seats, and I'm trying to remember the breakdown before the last redraw. We had 18 seats. I want to say it was 10-8 Republican, maybe 11-7 Republican. I mean, they basically wiped out a Democratic seat and a Republican seat in the redraw. However, by creating that district in Franklin County for Joyce, that Joyce Beatty now represents, they were able to solidify a 12-4 majority. But I'm just not remembering exactly what the breakdown is. I may not have that exactly right.
Email from Mike. One way to make gerrymandering harder would be to have a truly open primary system where I do not have to declare a party affiliation in order to vote in a primary. If we deny the state this information that I think violates my privacy, it would be harder to draw these unusual districts. Does that work in any matrix you've looked at, Brian Olson?
California recently moved to an open primary system. And in some cases, it reinforces the bias of a district where you have an open primary and then the top two vote getters move on to the general election. And in some districts there, they now have two Democrats in the general or two Republicans in the general. So there's really, in a way, less choice because of that. What I prefer is ranked choice ballots where you can vote for a first choice and a second choice and a third choice. And if you don't get your first choice, you might get your second. And that, I think, is a more powerful technique than the open primary.
Is anyone doing that?
Slowly. A few localities, city councils. Maine, the state of Maine just passed a ballot initiative most recently this last November. So we'll see how that turns out in the future.
I'm curious, Brian Olson, how you got involved. What piqued your interest in this in the first place?
Well, I heard about this thing, and I figured I'm a pretty good engineer. I bet I can deal with that data and see if I can build something that works. And so I tried it and built something, and it kind of works.
Is it that tough to do? Not trying to cast any dispersion on your qualifications, by the way.
It took me a few years of tinkering with it to make it work, yeah.
Your software is free and open source, allowing anyone to verify its function or tinker with it to make it better. How have people worked with it? How have they tinkered with it?
Some people have read it. Some people have, like you said in the intro, cited it in scholarly work. It's a point of reference out there for this is one way it might work.
And Jim Siegel, you mentioned that the Republicans are already using algorithms to do what they do. Why not? What has the opposition been at the Reformation level to just adopt something like this?
Well, for one thing, Brian's software does not take into account the congressmen and congresswomen who are already in office. That is always, you know, and now I'm not saying you should, but that is always taken into account when the lines are drawn by the human beings at the statehouse, because they don't, you know, they try to make sure that they don't force runoffs against people. They don't want to have runoff against each other like they did. I don't know if you remember when they drew the lines in 2011, they drew that crazy district that runs from downtown Toledo all the way into Cleveland along Lake Erie.
The snake along the lake.
Yeah. At one point, there's only a bridge that actually connects the district. And they did so that they could get two Democrats to run against each other. I think it was Betty Sutton and Kucinich. Mm-hmm. They like to take into account the folks who are there. They like to make sure that they draw these lines in a way that, like I said, if you just let the lines go like Brian's software does, I mean, you don't get to take into account the political ramifications, and that's the whole point of why they're doing gerrymandering, is so that they can draw certain neighborhoods and certain cities into specific districts so that they turn out the way they want. I mean, look at the legislative redistricting in Franklin County. Again, Franklin County is solidly blue, but there's 10 House seats in Franklin County. They are six Democrat and four Republican. They've been six and four since the moment these lines were drawn. As soon as the lines were drawn, you looked at the political indexes. You said, "Yep, this is probably going to be 6-4," and that's what it's been ever since. And there's rarely been a competitive race because they've been able to, they round up the Democrats into certain districts, and then they round up the Republicans in the others, and they give themselves nice safe seats even in a county like Franklin.
Brian Olson, we have to say goodbye to you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. It was fun.
Brian Olson, software engineer from Massachusetts. His software is free and open source and allowing anyone to verify its function or tinker with it, as I said, to make it better if they want. You can check it out on a link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Coming up, we're going to hear from a state lawmaker who has made one proposal for changing how districts are drawn in Ohio, and also a good government watchdog who's got another idea. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about how reform of Ohio's legislative and congressional districts are drawn every 10 years. Ohio voters approved a plan to reform how statehouse districts are drawn. Now work has started to do the same for Ohio's congressional delegation. Still with us is Columbus Dispatch Statehouse reporter Jim Siegel. Joining us is Chief Policy Analyst for Common Cause Ohio and Coordinator of the Fair Districts Equal Fair Elections Coalition, Catherine Terser. Welcome back.
Hello, and good morning to you.
And by phone is Ohio Republican Senator representing Northeast Ohio's 27th District, Frank LaRose. Welcome to the show, Senator.
Good morning, Ann. Thanks for having me.
You have a proposal out there. You know, we just heard from a computer scientist who has created software to draw district lines. Why can't we just go that route?
Well, I appreciate his efforts, and I appreciate Catherine's efforts and all the folks that care about this issue. It's an important issue. I guess I come from the school of thought that this is a human endeavor that needs to involve accountable individuals that are going to make these decisions. I've not seen a technological solution that is trustworthy that gets there. The question is who coded it, who wrote it, is there a bug in the works that somebody doesn't know about? And then there's important things that really are pretty complex. If you look at the state of Ohio, we're a state with a lot of different ethnic makeups, with a lot of different population centers and geographies. Redistricting the state of Ohio and doing so in a way that's consistent with the Voting Rights Act and with the other constitutional requirements for how these districts are drawn is a complex thing, and I would argue that you can't take the politics out of it. In fact, this has been my argument all along. Same thing with state legislative redistricting, that what you do have to do, though, is to put majority and minority, which is currently, you know, Republicans and Democrats, but could be other parties in the future. You got to put majority and minority in the room and then compel them to compromise, which is not a dirty word. Compromise is how statesmen and women solve problems. And if you can create a situation where they have to compromise and find middle ground on drawing these lines, then I think you can get districts that more accurately reflect the will of Ohioans.
Why can't then we just adopt whatever they did for the legislative redistricting in 2015 and just do that?
Well, I tell you what, I've introduced a resolution in the past that did that. It took the sort of the issue one format, mm-hmm. and changed it slightly to conform with some of the peculiarities of drawing congressional districts, and I've introduced that in the past. One of the chief concerns that was raised was a reasonable concern that the state legislature has historically had this responsibility. Some would say that it's an important state check on federal power. And so hearing those concerns, and again, that's an academic conversation that can be had, and folks have differing opinions on that. But in response to those concerns, I started thinking about, well, is there a way that we can still leave the state legislature in charge of this process but constrain them with certain requirements and certain rules and require them to achieve bipartisan compromise in most situations on how to draw these? And so that's what I think we've come up with Senate Joint Resolution 3. It would give the state legislature the first crack at it, and they would have until August of the year ending in 1, which is the year following the decennial census when redistricting is done. And if the state legislature can reach compromise across the aisle, if they can abide by the rules laid out that preserve communities of interest and compactness and the requirement that districts not be drawn to favor or disfavor a particular political party, if they can achieve that, and it's a high bar,
mm-hmm.
then they could pass the district lines. If they fail to do so, if they fail to do their job, then it would kick the responsibility over to the redistricting commission, which is what was constituted in issue one with 71% of voter support, and they would be the backstop. They would be the institution that would come in when the legislature could not do their job, and I think that the legislature would be under a lot of pressure to draw the district lines and to get it done right.
Catherine Tercer, Fair Districts Equal Fair Elections Coalition does not, I mean, they appreciate what Senator LaRose is working on, but you don't endorse it.
So that is right. So, you know, I have been so appreciative. We have a number of champions of redistricting reform. You know, Senator LaRose has been a long-term champion of doing something about gerrymandering.
Anything.
And so has, you know, so has our governor. Let's throw gerrymandering on the dustbin of history. And, you know, we also have our Secretary of State, who often talks about gerrymandering as the fractured foundation of our representative democracy. That, in fact, you know, that gerrymander cartoon goes back to 1812. And so I've been really appreciative of the folks that have been continuing to push for this. But I have difficulty buying the idea of leaving redistricting of Congress, you know, congressional lines with the state legislature. You know, I think the argument that it's a checks and balance on Congress is, you know, we all know about the checks and balance system. First of all, there's the president, then there's Congress. Oh, and then there's the state legislature. I mean, I think that's kind of silly. We know that, you know, we have the three branches of government. And the idea that the state legislature is a check on Congress is, it just makes me giggle. I do think, as we think about what it is that the voters said in 2015, voters said, you know, more than 71% of voters said, hey, we want a bipartisan redistricting commission. We want fair rules. And I don't quite understand how that type of mandate has not led to the legislature moving on just giving congressional redistricting reform to the Ohio Redistricting Commission.
Senator LaRose, your proposal would require a two-thirds vote of each chamber, the House and the Senate. But with record-sized GOP majorities in both, that's sort of irrelevant, isn't it?
I don't know if it's irrelevant. The two-thirds majority is something that the Republicans currently hold by the narrowest of margins in the House and by a slightly more comfortable majority in the Senate. But the fact is, with us reforming the way that state legislative lines are drawn, remember, we're talking about amending the state constitution. It's a pretty serious matter and will hopefully last long past all of us. And when my children and grandchildren, and my oldest is five, is involved in this process at some point in the future as an active citizen or whatever else, hopefully the things that we put in place are still there. So what we're talking about is if the people of Ohio have put a supermajority in the legislature, then that reflects the will of the voters, particularly under the more balanced process that was laid out in issue one. But, you know, this is not perfect. Again, where I agree with Catherine is that, and the other advocates on this, the governor and Secretary Husted, is that the way we draw district lines, and I would also pair it with the way that we fund campaigns, is a great cause of dysfunction, dissatisfaction, and it needs to be reformed. And so I'm offering compromises, other ideas, different ways of going about it. I drafted Senate Joint Resolution 3 because I think it's pretty darn good, but it could certainly be made better. Anything that the human mind can conceive can be improved upon, and I welcome feedback on how to do that. But one thing that we all agree on, I think, and 71% at least of Ohioans agree on, is that the current winner-take-all scenario is unsustainable and needs to be fixed.
Jim Siegel from the Dispatch is with us, and he mentioned earlier a theory about another reason why legislators want to keep control of the process, and that is for fundraising purposes, that, you know, every 10 years they get a big chunk of money from congressional delegates who want to keep their positions the way they are.
Well, and this kind of goes at Catherine's argument that this is not a real check on federal power. Now, the reason it's become laughable is because I would argue, as a constitutional conservative, that the 10th Amendment has been abused and neglected, and that the entities, remember, that which created the federal government are the states. Long before there was a state or a federal government, the states existed and had functioning legislatures. and for the states to have at least some measure of control over how the district lines are drawn is an important constitutional principle, and I don't consider it laughable. In the aggregate, all 50 state legislatures, I'll tell you this, that on those years ending in one, at the end of the old century, decade and the beginning of the new decade, those members of Congress are a lot more attentive to the concerns of their state legislator because they know that those individuals are going to be drawing the new district lines. And so I do think that that is something that's worth considering. And again, I just offered this as an alternative way to go about it. I also, in the past, have supported resolutions that would simply put this responsibility in the hands of the Redistricting Commission. I'm simply offering Senate Joint Resolution 3 in the spirit of compromise as a different way to go about this.
The Fair Districts Coalition doesn't support the senator's proposal. Catherine Turser, how is the process for moving forward if it does move forward? I mean, what's the timeline here? What are you working with?
So clearly, if we actually want to get on the ballot in November, the timeline is very tight. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about needing to collect more than 300,000 signatures by the very beginning of July. And you know, there are rules about, you know, 44 of 88 counties, 5% of the gubernatorial vote. And when we say signatures, they have to be registered voters and the address has to not have changed. And it is actually very difficult to do a citizens initiative. Now,
but less difficult than previously, given the results of the last gubernatorial election, which had pretty low turnout. And so that
means that's right. Yeah.
No, it's completely
lower.
Senator LaRose is completely right. If you're going to do a citizens initiative, the lower numbers, you know, we would never want to reduce the number of people who participate in a vote for governor, of course. But we certainly are in a better position than we were in the past. And I look back at redistricting reform measures that we did in 2005 and 2012. And, you know, in the past 25 years, only 42% of citizen-initiated ballot measures have passed. And those are the ones that changed the actual Ohio Constitution. And so, you know, we've been it seems like we're very plodding about this, and we are, and it has to do with getting ourselves really prepared to do this absolutely right and to make sure that people are educated not just about the problem but also the solution. We've spent a lot of time asking people to give comments on the proposal. We put it out in October. It's been this slow process talking to different stakeholders. And so we are in that process of preparing to actually begin signature gathering.
And I would argue that as much as I appreciate the effort and the energy behind the citizen initiative and the historical precedent for why the citizen initiative is an important way of changing law, I would argue that legislative referral is a much more collaborative process. Remember that when we put issue one in front of the voters, that it resulted from a lot of compromise, a lot of consensus building. We passed that at 3:30 in the morning. All of us remember that. You know, your mom said nothing good ever happens after midnight. Well, redistricting reform happened after midnight because Republicans and Democrats rolled up their sleeves, ordered some boxes of pizza, and sat there and compromised on it. And that doesn't happen necessarily with the citizen initiative as it does with legislative referral.
Which is one of the reasons why we've been taking a lot of time to get our proposal out there. It is very, very similar to issue one of 2015. And, you know, at this point, you know, I could stand at Broad and High with a whole bunch of people urging the state legislature to get moving on redistricting reform. And I'm not sure that that would actually change the dial at all.
Yeah, Senator LaRose is right in that if they can get a bipartisan congressional redistricting plan in place that goes on the ballot, that is a huge step, only in that you don't have organized opposition from either party going after it. And the issue in 2015, issue one, showed that. I mean, there was not a huge push of money that supported, you know, there was not a big campaign behind issue one to support it. There was some, but not there wasn't a big money push there. But just the fact that neither party opposed it meant that it, you know, got just tremendous support at the ballot just because no one was around to say it was a bad idea.
Jim Siegel, thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your help.
Happy to do it.
Jim Siegel, State House reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Also, Catherine Turser, Chief Policy Analyst for Common Cause Ohio and coordinator of the Fair Districts Equals Fair Elections Coalition. Thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
And Senator Frank LaRose, thank you for joining our conversation. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Ann.
Frank LaRose, Republican Ohio Senator representing Northeast Ohio's 27th District and also a sponsor of a resolution to change how congressional districts are redrawn in the state of Ohio. Thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.